Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lakeen. I began this radio program to give greater visibility to solutions to today's challenges and to the people who create solutions and drive positive social change. Our guest today has done more to identify and support problem solvers and change makers than anyone in the world. Bill Drayton is the chair and CEO of Ashoka, the largest and most successful network of social entrepreneurs in the world, which he founded in 1981. A graduate of Harvard College and Yale Law School, he has helped to create and lead the whole field of social entrepreneurship, unleashing the creativity of people to solve problems around the world. Bill Drayton, welcome to All Together Now.
Eleanor, it's great to be with you.
I'm thrilled to talk to you. I've been wanting to speak with you for many years, and I'm happy we're doing it on the air to share the conversation with our listeners. And to start, for our listeners who don't know about Ashoka, how would you describe the purpose of the organization?
Well, let me start with the phrase social entrepreneur. That means, entrepreneur means someone who changes the whole society, changes the pattern. Social means that the person from deep within is committed to the good of all, and therefore the work is. And so Ashoka is an association of the world's leading social entrepreneurs. We help the best new ideas and entrepreneurs get started. It's a community of mutual help and collaboration. And increasingly, we're able to see the patterns and how that means where the world needs to go and how we work together to make that happen. So it's a very, very powerful group. Over half of them have changed national policy within 5 years of their launch, three-quarters the pattern in their field nationally, and over 90% have had independent institutions copy the ideas. There are 3,600 Ashoka Fellows now and many, many more partners, Ashoka Young Changemakers, other parts of this movement.
That's fantastic. And you started internationally and you're working worldwide. How many countries do you have these Ashoka Fellows in?
There are 95 countries where Ashoka Fellows live, but of course they work in many more places. So we can't, for a variety of reasons you can understand, operate in Iran, but there are many fellows from the surrounding countries and beyond that work there. So it's at least 95.
Fantastic. And you mentioned you look for the people who can change the pattern in the whole field. So we're not just talking about kind of making things incrementally better, but actually changing the pattern in the whole field. Can you give us an example of an Ashoka Fellow who changes the pattern in the whole field?
Sure. I'm going to choose a Canadian, Mary Gordon. She was a teacher in schools in Toronto. She grew up in a small town in Newfoundland and sounds sort of like a Celtic Mary Poppin. And she gave herself permission to see that there are more and more kids in her classroom had no way of responding to another kid who made them uncomfortable other than with aggression. And, mm-hmm. of course, that invites aggression back, and every time kids go through that cycle, it gets more ingrained. She said there's no future for kids who have that pattern. This is a big problem. How am I going to solve it, not just for my class, but for all kids? That's the classic social entrepreneur at work. They give themselves permission to see a big problem, and I'm going to fix it for the whole society. So, just jumping ahead, she's national policy in two countries plus Scotland. In over 20 countries, and the results are pretty clear. The bullying rates come down and stay down 5 years later. So what does she do? She asks the schools to give her 2 to 3 hours a month for 8 months, so maximum 24 hours. And at the beginning of the school year, she wants the younger classes, the better. So she gets an infant from the neighborhood, 2 to 4 months old at the beginning of the school year, who comes with their mom. The infant wears a little T-shirt, "The Professor." So the professor resides on a green blanket with mom, and the third graders are in a circle around. The teacher sits in the back of the room and is not in control. There's a facilitator, so the kids are responsible. And they've got to figure out what the professor is saying, and then what is the professor feeling, and there are various exercises. So this is limbic learning combined with thinking together. And just that simple intervention has a long-lasting, profound impact. Now, why is this important? In a world defined by change, it's no longer possible to be a good person by just diligently following the rules. The rules cover less and less as the rate of change accelerates. So you have to have cognitive empathy to guide you to be a good person in life. We're all born with mirror neurons and cerebral cortex, but they have to learn to work together. So if I see you looking sad and I haven't gone through that learning, I will literally feel your pain. You can see the same places lighting up. And then I'm going to focus on my pain. That's not so helpful. But if you have this training, which is what Mary is giving, then if I look at you looking sad, I say to myself, I am going to help Eleanor. I can figure out how to do that. And I am not feeling pain. I am expressing love and respect in action. And I am really happy. So this is a completely fundamental set of skills. Any child today who is not getting the skill cannot just follow the rules and get by. They are going to hurt people, they're going to disrupt groups, and they're gone. And anyone who looks like them, people don't want to have around. So, Mary, it sounds so simple, but look at how profound this change is. Now, we've got to make sure that every parent, every school knows about this and starts using the tool, and that's where our working together as a global community of leading social entrepreneurs come in. But Mary is a good example. You can take any problem, and there are social entrepreneurs that come up to deal with it. Would another example, but much shorter, be good?
Yes, exactly. I think just to comment on that, I think that's a great beginning example, particularly now where we have so much mobility around the world, people moving and working and living in different places, refugees going from country to country, and the need for that kind of mutual respect is critical. And without that, we could just aggravate the social tensions that we're already suffering under. So, yeah, why don't you try also another example?
Well, just on that social tensions point, you're so right. People who don't have these skills can't play. They can't contribute in this new world defined by change, not repetition. And they are being pushed out. They're not imagining this. They are being pushed out. Mm-hmm. The people who have these skills don't want people who don't have these skills because they're going to muck up the system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrible feeling. I mean, it's so hard for people who have these skills to even begin to imagine how terrifying it is. The rate of change is accelerating, and there's less and less demand for repetition, and you need this and other skills to be able to contribute. So let me give you another example. In Lagos, Interpol went in, and they found that over 80% of the pharmaceuticals in the pharmacies were fake.
Wow.
Well, that
you
has
mean
a
like
pretty
phony
big
drugs?
Impact. Phony, yes. Coming from China and all sorts of places, people making a nice profit. Well, you know, this has a really big impact on your health system. So Bright Simon, who is a Ghanaian, he saw a big problem, gave himself permission. He said, oh, well, now almost everyone suddenly has a cell phone. Not a smartphone, but a cell phone. And they, with a cell phone, you could take a picture of the barcode and check in if you can set up the phone system with the pharmaceutical company and get a text back, it's a fake, don't buy it, or it's okay. Well, the pharma companies like this, the customers like it, it goes after really, that's now working in many countries in Africa and South Asia. It's moving into South America this year, and he's gone on to replacement auto parts. You know, fake auto parts aren't exactly great for safety either. So, again, One person gave himself permission to see a problem, to imagine a solution, and then he had to really be persistent and get the phone services to provide a free service and the pharma companies to be set up. This was not totally easy. In fact, it required, as all entrepreneurship does, tremendous persistence. But you can see these are two superficially different problems and solutions, but it's the same type of person. And I think the most important message we can get across to the community that are with us today is everyone can do this if you give yourself permission.
Uh-huh.
Stop listening to all the people who say, you can't, you can't, you can't. That means they didn't. And they're going to feel uncomfortable if you do. So be very nice and polite, but ignore all that.
That's great. And I want to come back to that because I know that's kind of an emerging focus for you and for Ashoka. But before we explore everyone being a change maker, I'd like to talk just a little bit about the point you raised with respect to the Ashoka Fellow in Toronto dealing with the bullying. And you said that she has this approach, and now the key is making it better known. And it is one of the biggest challenges for social entrepreneurs to have their innovations be better known and to bring their solution onto a bigger scale, which requires often some serious money and some good communication so more people know about it. What has Ashoka done to help fellows get their solutions to be better known and to help them be brought to scale?
Well, this has been a learning curve mainly over the last 10 or 12 years. So this is a breakthrough for us as well. It helps to recognize that there are three different levels of impact, and they're all important. You need direct service. A teacher in the classroom, someone out there digging a well. That's not what we do. So entrepreneurship starts at the next level, which is pattern change. So Mary and Bright have both introduced pattern changes. Now, there's a level beyond that, which is mindset change. And Mary's idea will become universal when parents understand and elementary school principals and teachers understand. They're all failing if they allow one second grader to not have mastered this fundamental skill for life, cognitive empathy-based living for the good of society of all. So the challenge for mindset change is how do we, in fact, get everyone to see that and go through a society-wide tipping of how people see the world. So So the women's movement was an example. I'm embarrassed to tell you that although I was involved in civil rights in high school and college, it never occurred to me that anything was wrong with the way women were treated. And the women's movement came along, and you know, I was drawn into a society-wide mindset change. Right now, we need a really big mindset change. It's a world of change, not repetition. From the end of the Roman Republic until 1700, there was no growth in average per capita income in the West. It was just static. It went up and down with weather cycles. From 1700 till now, the rate of change has been going up exponentially. And this is just as important. Third fact, the demand for repetition has been going down exponentially. So we are now three centuries into two very fundamental exponential curves. The old system gives someone a skill, barber, banker, doesn't matter, and then they're supposed to repeat that for life, which is, you know, and organizations were had walls. It's very efficient. As long as very little changed, the game was efficiency and repetition, assembly line, law firm, etc. Completely gone, except for the fact that inertial momentum keeps a lot of institutions behaving that way. The things that work are now fluid open teams where everyone is a change maker. You can't compete with those institutions, countries, cities. There's no way. But understanding lags behind. So how do we help people see, okay, this is the new strategic environment. It's real, it's here, it's a fact. Every person, organization, and system is bumping everyone else. They change, and we all are bumping one another. It's the exact opposite reality of what we had. Well, that means that every organization needs everyone in it to see changes anywhere in the environment. Say, oh, that's an interesting change. That might affect us. Oh, here's a new opportunity. And then you have to come together quickly. You don't have a year. You have a couple of weeks to come together and organize a new team of teams to go after that opportunity. A team means everyone is initiatory, a change maker. Everyone is helping everyone else be the strongest possible player, change maker. Leadership is completely different. It's envisage, which starts empowerment, empower, enable. So in that world, people are much better off, society is much better off, but we've got to see it. Once people start seeing it, and I can give you some evidence that we're in the tipping years right now, things change so fast. And then parents are going to go to elementary school principals and ask, what proportion of the second graders in your school have mastered cognitive empathy and at what level? And they're going to look beady-eyed at the principal, and the parents and the principal know what the right answer is. This is very similar to literacy in written language. That was a radical decision 150 years ago. The rate of change had reached the point where you needed people to read street signs. You needed literacy. And that's just a fact. You needed it. And then there's all sorts of different ways of getting there. What we're saying is that right now, we're living in a world of change, not repetition. It's an everything-changing world. The game is change, and people have to be change makers. Now, when we get that message across, the demand for Mary's work is everywhere. Principals are going to say, oh, my God, how are we going to do this? Oh, well, Mary's approach looks like that's one of the more effective. Let's bring that in. And then she's no longer pushing. The society is pulling for her ideas. So how to do that? We've learned the methodology of how to do that. We've studied prior framework change moments, and you have to get key partners. So in this case, for growing up, it's young children must master cognitive empathy, and then young people, 11 through 20, they have to practice being change makers. And the key measure, and this is a classic mindset measure, is what proportion of 12 or 15 or 17-year-olds know that they're a change maker, and they can't know if they haven't done it. So how do we, young children have to master empathy, and teenagers have to practice and ultimately know that they're change makers. How do we get there? So, and we're actually working on this at the moment, and it's really going quite well. So what are the most important forces we need to set in motion? Teachers' unions, government, publishers, education, schools. And in each of those, the first actors are going to get a tremendous competitive advantage. So we have an ed school in Brazil, and they understand this is their moment. If they do this, they become the number one ed school. They raise the money. They get the best students. They're totally on it. They're pushing it. The Union of Supervisors in Brazil, the Ministry of Education, this is the most important thing they can do. Well, you set that sort of those sort of forces at work, they reinforce one another. And we're in the process of doing the same thing here and in Europe and in South Asia and just starting in Africa. And it's actually a pretty straightforward methodology. And the fellows are totally critical. When you look at 1,000 fellows, Mary is 1 out of 1,000 that are focused on kids. 95% of them put kids in charge, which is completely unusual. Well, that means we have well over 1,000 different ways of doing it. And we have people who are really good at causing large pattern change in this area. And so they step up as co-partners, and they're working with the teachers' unions, the mayors, the ed schools. And so that's where we are. And there's a third stage when you get into the tipping years, where if you think, probably a lot of the people who are with us saw the film Selma. Well, that was a very conscious 6-plus-month soap opera with daily episodes, and so was Birmingham. That was classic Gandhian methodology. So people tune in when they're able, when they feel the need. The society is going through this change. They need a safe place to get stories. So they tune in. They don't know what happened in the last 5 days in Selma, but there is this jerk, the sheriff, who's behaving outrageously. And here are these very disciplined, loving, respecting people from the two churches. And you can tune in to that day's episode. So our job in the third stage is working with the teachers' unions, the leading mayors, etc., and the individual mom in Denver or Wichita, the young girl in a district town in central India, the principal in Warsaw, people we've got to give them the access to the ideas and the tools and find one another. They step up in their communities. It's the combination of those things and the stories that really are the necessary part of that third stage. So it's incredibly thrilling, and we have this power of being able to see the future because we can see the patterns of what the fellows are doing. And we understand what an everyone a change maker world is. It's architecture, how the pieces fit together, the skills people have to have. And those two fit. Anyway, so, and we have this four-stage jujitsu process that is now beginning to work.
Well, before we get there, let's just kind of talk a little bit about what you've just put on the table here in the conversation, which is a lot of fascinating information and perspective. When you say we need a broad mindset change, is the key on that mindset change to go from, a world of repetition to a world of change? Or how would you summarize the mindset change we need to make?
You're exactly right. That's the first part.
Okay.
Once you say out loud, I now live in a world of change, not repetition, value now is being able to see patterns, put them together in new ways, and form teams of teams, be good in new teams of teams that form quickly and change quickly or constantly morphing. That's a very, very rich and different set of skills than was needed in the past. So new strategic environment to play, you got to have these skills, and then you got to know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where growing up, and if you're running any organization, a citizen organization, a company, a religious group, you've got to hire for these sort of skills. You've got to help the people who are with you develop these skills. You've got to have a team of teams organization. And none of that makes sense unless you see this is the new strategic environment. So you're exactly right. That's the first step. And being able to visualize, and the moment people can visualize in their mind, okay, this is how the world works now. Oh, I see. My daughter really has to have these skills. Oh, and I can actually help her do that. Then, you're off and running. The game is the mindset is there. And then it's a process of people helping one another and competitively and collaboratively developing better ways and new collaborations and new teams of teams. But it's that moment when people can see the new game, the new strategic environment, and can see what it means for them. When we think about the measures we apply here, for the first level of pattern change, it's how many wells did you dig? For that's direct service. For pattern change, Mary is doing pattern change. And she's got two countries and 35,000 classrooms. Mindset change is a different thing. So the measure there is what proportion of 12 or 15-year-olds know that they're a change maker? And you can't know it if you haven't done it. You haven't had enough practice with the four skills, empathy, sophisticated teamwork, and opposite type of leadership and change making itself, to know that, yeah, I can do this. I've actually been doing this. And you feel that you've changed your class or your school. You've built a team. That's the moment that a young person gets their power. And once they have that, they know they can change the world because they just changed their world. They know they have enough of the skills. They're going to be a happy, healthy person for life. They're going to be in great demand. They're in the new game. Any parent is going to be happy.
Yes, and Ashoka made its reputation by identifying some of the people around the world who were the best at what you've described. And in fact, you've coined the term social entrepreneurship, the ones who were really changing the pattern, making a big difference in a way that could change their field. Now your focus seems to be more around having not just these special people who are the effective pattern changers and the Ashoka Fellows, but that the central objective now is having everyone a change maker. Is that an accurate reflection of your current focus? And if so, what led you to that new focus?
Well, they actually fit together. There's no discontinuity. So if you think about how a social entrepreneur works, Mary Gordon isn't out dealing directly with 35,000 classrooms. She has a small organization and a big movement. And what is that movement? She's gotten local people in the Isle of Wight, in Winnipeg, in all these different places. Oh, I see the problem. This is a solution at work. We need that in our community. We're going to stand up and be local change makers. So social entrepreneurs are mass recruiters, facilitators of local change makers who in turn become role models and recruit others. It's a very integral part of what social entrepreneurs do. So that's point one. And then second, it's from the fellows that we see the pattern. We saw the pattern that fellows were putting kids in charge before we understood everyone a change maker. It's overwhelmingly obvious. Literally 95% of the 1,000 fellows focused primarily on kids put kids in charge. I mean, this is very different from the school system that you and I know around the world.
Uh-huh.
So again, it's the fellows. You know, in the day we live in now, focus groups are almost useless except for very narrow, short-term tactical things. Because what's in people's heads is the past. And the one exception is where you have great entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs get no satisfaction from publishing or being burned at the stake in a demonstration. They have to see the world change to be happy, satisfied human beings in their life. They don't do things if they don't think they're going to work. It takes 10 or 20 years, and so you have to have intuited what the world is going to be like. So it's it's the almost only focus group that's good about the future. When 95% of them put kids in charge, you know that is a pretty big part of what the future is going to be about. And then, of course, you think about what an everyone a change maker world is, and that's what we've learned in the last 10 years, and they completely fit. You can't have an everyone a change maker world unless people are change makers, and in the life cycle of human beings, that has to happen in the teens. I mean, it's just, there it is. They totally fit together. And the third point is that who is going to be co-leading this with us? It's going to be people who define themselves as players in a big game, who have experience playing in a big change game, and who want to play even bigger. So it's not an accident that in Brazil, Ana Lucia and her organization are 100% partners with Ashoka in working with the Ministry of Education, the Union of Supervisors, and this ed school. 100%. Most powerful thing she's doing, we couldn't do it without her. So we see the patterns. We have 1,000 different how-tos. Mary is just one of the many different tools. And we have partners. And they've already been creating local change makers who are probably going to be people who will be early adapters in their community as we move on the frame change. So the pieces all fit together. And, of course, this greatly strengthens the fellows.
Right. And you mentioned that you see that the world is at a tipping point. How would you describe what the tipping point is? Is that what you're talking about when you say everything's changing faster and faster and creating this new strategic environment?
Yes, I mean, we've been building up to that for the 300 years, but now we're at the tipping point of people seeing it. And, of course, that dramatically increases the rate of change. So let me give you some evidence of this. I think I promised I would do that earlier.
Yes.
40 years ago, we created a number of different phrases, very consciously, because when you create something new, you don't have language to describe something that people haven't been thinking about.
Uh-huh.
So we created the word social entrepreneur. We played around with public service entrepreneur, etc. We created the word change maker, and we created the phrase team of teams to describe how you have to organize in this new world. So social entrepreneur has taken off and has become ubiquitous. That happened probably early 90s. It was beginning to happen, and it's great. It's a construct all around the world. People who won't be social entrepreneurs, but they'll be change makers. They have a construct. It's practical to care and organize. You can do that with all or part of your life, and you're going to be respected. It's feasible. That's really powerful, and of course that leads into everyone a change maker as well. Well, in the last 3 years, the word change maker has gone from being a nice specialist word that a few people used to being a common word. And so one of the examples of that was at the Democratic National Convention this past summer. If some of you may remember, Bill Clinton introducing his wife, he kept using the word change maker.
Right.
And then every single delegate held up a sign, blue on white, white on blue, with one word, change maker.
Right.
That was the word for the day. Now, that wasn't an accident. They chose that very carefully, and it had an impact. They wouldn't have done that if the word wasn't understood and didn't have very powerful positive connotations. I was in a Portuguese-speaking area not so long ago, and suddenly I heard the word changemaker in the midst of all this Portuguese. So now Team of Teams is about a year behind changemakers, but it's just become ubiquitous. Now, why would this be happening? It's because people need to talk about this, and they need a word. They need that phrase, because there is no other way of talking about it. And so that's one, when language is suddenly needed by people, you know they're talking about it, they're thinking about it, they're wrestling. Very good sign. So depending on how you count it, 6 or 7 ministers, deputy ministers of education on 4 continents have endorsed the Ashoka very different definition of what success in growing up is. What proportion of teens know they're a change maker? Well, that's not your usual definition. They're endorsing that. Ministers of education are not futurists. But like everyone else in education, after your first 5 minutes of being in a honeymoon period, the next day you're being blamed for the system failing. There's a hunger. There's a recognition. And so we are at the tipping point, and that is so powerful for all of us. It makes it easier. It means there are more people who are ready to play, and people can be less afraid of taking up this new set of ideas because people are not going to look at them as if they're crazy. In fact, people may worry if they don't have something to say in this subject area, they're really going to look dumb. That's a big change. So anyway, we really are at this tipping point, and once you get there, you have not only the underlying exponential nature of the growth in the rate of change and decline in demand for repetition, but then you pile on top of that the acceleration of the turning point years, and you really get fast change.
All right, so if I'm tracking you right here, you're saying that basically when things were more stable, kind of structures and processes were more steady and stable with a slower rate of change, we could kind of get by with, repetitive learning, because that's the world didn't change that much, so what you learned would be relevant 10, 20, 30 years later. But now, with the rate of change up so dramatically, it's not enough to be able to have repetitive education. You actually have to learn how to think, and you have to be able to learn how to deal with a rapidly changing environment. Is that part of what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. I bet you everyone who's with us, if you think 2 seconds, you can start making a list of classes of work that are disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Truck drivers. Alibaba has a lending operation. I'm a year behind on the statistics, but $6 billion. They built it up over 5 years. Maximum loan, $10,000. So a lot of loans. They have a very good failure to repay rate, 0.87% versus the Chinese average, acknowledged average of 0.95. Well, if your friendly local bank were doing that, how many lending officers would they have to have? A huge number. And then there'd have to be managers of all those people. Well, Alibaba has no lending officers and no managers of the non-existent lending officers. So if your daughter thinks she's going to be a bank officer, maybe not. The IBM's Watson, they think it'll replace 50 plus or minus percent of what doctors and nurses do in the next 4 or 5 years. But what is needed, so that's the negative point, that what mm-hmm. is needed is the positive skill of being a change maker. And it's a very sophisticated set of skills. And you can't afford to have anyone on your team who doesn't have that. You need. So I've just been working with a company in the Midwest. They have a lot of machinists, and they need those machinists to be change makers. They aren't. The company will never hire another machinist. They don't want the machinists to know that at the moment, which is why I'm being a little cagey about describing them.
Uh-huh.
They need every employer. So if you were a machinist there and you loved hockey, they would want you to be looking at the world of hockey as you're enjoying and say, oh, this team is doing something very different with their fans. Oh, I see that's a potential pattern. I wonder what that would mean for us, our suppliers, our customers. And then how would you modify it? And how is it likely to develop? And then you have to, the company would want you to be able to bring that and deal with other people and quickly form a team. And that team better have someone from that hockey team on it, because they're the ones who know about this. So forget all the old walls, go away, and you quickly form these teams. Well, this is a very high level of skills. It's just a completely different way of thinking about skills.
Uh-huh.
And so the old skills is just not going to be demand, specifically including the intellectual skills, because that's where the biggest costs are. And, I mean, just think about how much Alibaba saves when they have a self-correcting algorithm and they have a couple of hundred employees rather than thousands and thousands, and they make decisions in a few minutes so the customers are happy, you know, costs, and they have a lower failure to repay rate. How can you compete with that?
All right. Good. Well, we have about 10 minutes left, and I had a number of other issues I wanted to discuss with you, and starting first and foremost with the media. And we know the media focuses on what's not working in the breakdowns with little attention to what is working in the breakthroughs. And that kind of a focus can make people feel depressed and hopeless. But in fact, we're surrounded by insurmountable opportunity and solutions. But what can we do, do you think, to get more media attention on the social entrepreneurs and their solutions?
Well, we should have more people come to your program, for sure.
That's a good start.
So if if you are a publisher and you recognize that we are at this turning point, your viewers or readers need the future.
Mm-hmm.
They need the how-tos of, so that they can be actors. Now, this is not what the traditional media gives. They give the past, and they give criticism. So that's there's some value to that. So one of the reasons the media tells you bad things is that there is a market for it because people do not read law books. It's when they read about someone who did something bad, and then, you know, they had something terrible happen to them as a result, that's how they learn what the rules are. The rules are changing. So there's a usefulness to that. But the journalists, the publishers who help society see the future and what it means for them, they have the future. And it's a major transition. Many journalists are afraid about talking about the future because, oh, we might be an advocate. And it is more work. You have to really think. Which of these options is likely to be the most valuable? But boy, the journalists who are doing this are doing really well. So if you think about The Economist, how did they become the leading English news magazine? Well, in the late 19th and early 20th century, they not only gave commodity news, but they helped people understand the liberal revolution in society, economics, and politics. This change is going on. It's good. Here's what it means for you. And they kept doing that for several decades. And so people went to them because they got something much more than the commodity news. And that's the, here we are, this huge change. People desperately need to figure it out. It affects every part of their lives. And, you know, you're helping people see pattern solutions. You're helping people see that they can play as a social entrepreneur or a change maker. You know, I just think what you're doing is invaluable.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And for some of our listeners who may not know, I spent 20 years going around the United States looking for those social entrepreneurs who were actually developing not just incrementally better ways of doing things, but approaches that would transform the whole field. And I'm so excited to know that there's so many of these solutions out there, but that they're often languishing as models of what's possible without getting the attention they deserve and getting the money and communications ability to have the successful models be more widely adapted and adopted. So we have the solutions out there. If we could learn more from them and, like you're saying, develop more change makers so we even have more of the solutions coming forward. And I wanted to ask you, you're a leader in creating and developing the whole field of social entrepreneurship. When you started Ashoka in 1981, you were the first that I know of to devote an organization to identifying and supporting social entrepreneurs. Now, 35 years later, the whole field has exploded, and there's many more groups, foundations, colleges active in the sector, like the Skoll Foundation and New Profit, Inc. Who, besides Ashoka, do you think is doing the best work in the field of social entrepreneurship?
Well, the good news is that it's, as you say, it's now a rich field, but it's still small compared to the resources that are available to business. No one's dumping $20 or $30 billion a year into the field. So much of the people who are contributing are indeed the people in the field. people like you who see it and provide a multiplier for the ideas. So resources are not just money. It's people, mm-hmm. money, information, and then business-like activities. So in the citizen sector in the U.S., 53% of the revenues are fee-for-service. But how much more is the spread of ideas? So if you look at the typical social entrepreneur, you have the entrepreneur, a small organization, and a big movement. Thousands of people who are standing up and saying, this is a good idea, we need it here, we're going to make it happen. So it's hugely powerful. So if I could just give you an example of a young person and their power, I think it will drive
sure.
this last point home. So we have a showcase of program to encourage every young person to have their own dream, build their own team, and change their school community. And there are thousands of young people here and across the world who are in this. So we had a meeting at Georgetown, Mount Vernon campus. About 350 U.S. youth venturers are there for a week. I went over, sat down at lunch, six-person table. This very small young woman came down and sat to my right. She quickly introduced herself and said, I'm 12, because I think she was a little tired of people thinking she's 8. And so I said, oh, in the context, you know, what's your venture? And she said, well, my brother's autistic, and all through school I would cry when he was mistreated.
Mm.
But now we've fixed that. Oh, well, how did you do that? Well, we get together whenever we see a special student who's not being treated well, and we figure out what to do. And then we go and do it, and we're very persistent. Now, that is 90% her words. Very simple, that if you had been there, you would, A, have had goosebumps, and B, you wouldn't have any doubt, whatever. She has her power for life. She's not going to be afraid of anything. She is a change maker. She knows it. And she's brought a whole bunch of other kids along with her. And she's helped strengthen the Everyone a Change Maker community in that school. I asked her one other question. How many student groups are there in Shirley Middle School, which is a poor rural school? Nothing elite about it, whatever. Oh, over 50. Wildly unusual. One person in that neighborhood over 8 years made this the norm for 16 townships. So when she went in at 11, she went into a Everyone a Change Maker middle school. She had a problem. All the kids said to her, you be a change maker in effect. Think of a solution. Build a team. Look around. That's the way it works. And by the way, join us. Use our services, and all her friends. So she walked into the world that she's going to have to live in later. This is a radical change for what middle and high schools need to be. What we want is for every middle and high school to do that. Now, she is part of the leadership of this movement. And every step we take in that direction is a big step. Now, I don't think there is one person who is with us today who doesn't care about a young person. Is that young person practicing change-making? Is she getting her power? Well, if she isn't, you can do something about it. She comes home and says, you know, no one listens to us. The way immigrant kids are treated is awful. Kids are having a lot of trouble with math, put everything down. This is a really important moment. I'm really proud of you for seeing that problem. What do you think you could do about it? And you draw her out a little bit. Well, that's a really interesting idea. Why don't you get your friends and go and do it? Who, me? Yeah, you can do this, and here's why it's really important. And she probably won't do it the first time, but she'll come back more readily the next time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the third or fourth time she will. And you've got one big thing you've got to do. You don't take over. You don't let a brother take over, a teacher. Nobody takes over. It's got to be hers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do that, you can make sure that the young person you really care about is going to be a change maker, is going to be a giver, is going to be a happy, healthy person in their life. And you have done something really big, not just for that person, but for their school or community. Everyone they're going to touch, you have helped the Everyone a Change Maker revolution. And in doing that, by the way, you're going to become a change maker even more than you already are.
That's a great insight for our listeners. And we have just about 30 seconds left. Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners on what else, any practical steps that they can take in this whole domain?
Just understanding that we are at this tipping point. Look around you. What is really working? Why is it that for the Jesuits have always been an Everyone a Change Maker island? It's not an accident we have the first Jesuit Pope in 500 years. Why is Bangalore Silicon Valley taking off? Why is Google a team of teams very consciously? Look at what works. This is here. It's a fact. Once you see that and you can imagine fluid teams forming and reforming and being connected with one another ways in so many more ways, in so many more fluid ways, the moment you see that, you have the strategic map and the rest of it follows. I know this is a really smart group of people, and everyone mm-hmm. can do this. And when you understand it, help other people understand it. That's the biggest gift you can give anyone, giving them the power to be a giver.
Wonderful. And if for more information, our listeners can go to your website, ashoka.org. It's ashoka.org. That's all the time we have. Bill Drayton, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you all, hugely.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back 1 week from today. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LeCain with All Together Now.